Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The Burrows of Korea podcast.
Welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I am Rick Welch. And guys, I have a very, very cool guest for you today. Our pal, Bobby Cruikshank, told me about this nice lady and a website that she has called HebrewWordLessons.com. And I thought, well, that's interesting. He said, you should check it out. And so I did. And wow, I was introduced to Sarah Fisher. Hello, Sarah Fisher.
Hello.
It's so nice to meet you.
Yes, you as well. Looking forward to tonight.
Me too. So one of the things that Bob said right out of the gate, he's like, you've got to meet this person. You've got to meet Sarah because she has so much information in regard to the languages of the Bible that he uses you. He uses you. That's what he looks for, you know, from you. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. Love helping Bob. We kind of work together a little bit academically, helping each other out. So yeah, it's been great meeting him.
That's really cool. So one of the things I wanted to know just right out of the gate is, tell me about your faith. I'm very curious because it says, I think I saw it throughout your blog, that you are a follower of Yeshua. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. I'm also a follower of Jesus, and I'm happy to go either way.
Either way.
Yeah, I use Yeshua through the blog because it is a Hebrew word lesson blog, and Jesus was Hebrew, and I love just bringing that historical context into it. Mm-hmm. I do preach as a lay pastor at a Presbyterian church, mm-hmm. and we use Jesus, and sometimes I throw them Yeshua that way, and I use Yahweh often instead of the Lord. But so I am born, raised Christian. My mom introduced me to Jesus when I was a little girl. So I've had a long road of faith, but it really wasn't until my 40s that the lights went wow, and things really started to change. I kind of got into this new direction.
So I'm very curious. You said you were introduced to Jesus as a little girl. So were you always Presbyterian, or were you from?
No.
Oh, so tell me about that early phase, like when you first met Jesus and got introduced to him.
Yeah, well, I was, you know, it was kind of a classic for a lot of us who, you know, mom or dad introduced us to Jesus, and then we went to church and we kind of felt that connection and built a community. And for me, that was the United Brethren Church of Christ in Canada, which is only 10 churches. They're all in Ontario. Anabaptist kind of start.
Oh, okay.
And then when I went off to university, I went to University of Waterloo in Canada, and they have church colleges, and I went to the Mennonite church colleges. So most of my friends are Mennonite background, New Order Mennonite. And so it's also Anabaptist. So I kind of had that connection going, and a great place, Conrad Grebel College. And it was, I met so many of my close friends are from there, and it was great to go to university, but also like a secular university, but also have a faith community there. But when we moved to Prince Edward Island in 2014, there is no Mennonite church on Prince Edward Island. There's no United Brethren church in Prince Edward Island. So we just decided that we would go church shopping, as you do. And the second church we went to was a little country Presbyterian church. And my husband just made a connection with the greeter there. His name was Elmer McDonald. And he just, after that, he was like, I think we found our church. So we came back the next week and he had more conversations. My husband and Elmer and Kevin, my husband, who's since passed away. But he was like, yeah, I think this is the community I want to belong to. So it really, I mean, Presbyterian isn't Anabaptist. You know, it's very different, right? It's very different. But then it was just more community. It was a sense of, this community. And my kids, who are adults now, and my husband also had not been baptized when we came in 2014. And so they were baptized, but I was like, can we have, like, it's an adult baptism, clearly. And in my tradition, it was always kind of in living water. I was baptized in Lake Huron. And so the three of them were baptized in the Atlantic Ocean. So
wow.
Great. So it's not the typical Presbyterian. It's yeah, for me it was more community than actually, you know, the rules and regulations of a various denomination.
Right. Now, so you're still in Prince Edward Island, I assume?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you are fully Canadian.
I'm fully Canadian.
Fully Canadian.
Fully Canadian.
Well, that's so great.
Yeah. I do have Mayflower connections. So there is some, like, way back. But really? Then all my family during the American Revolution, they all decided to be loyalists and came to Canada. So yeah, loyal to the king.
So I'm very curious. So tell me about this shift you said earlier. So you said that when you were in around in your 40s, something clicked for you and a light came on. I'm very curious what that was.
Yeah. Well, you know, you kind of think it might be like something that I studied or read, but it wasn't any of those things. It was, this may be bold for me to say, but I really think it was the spirit moving me. Mm-hmm. I'm a history student. I have a master's in medieval studies. I'm also an amateur family genealogist. I've loved and studied history since I was a kid. But in 2016, when we came here, this little Presbyterian church hosted a spiritual gifts course. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that would be fun because it's all about learning more about me. It was very like, woo-hoo. You know,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's looking back, I was like, oh man, I didn't really have that frame of mind, right? But did the course. It was like a 5 or 6 day course. And eventually, you know, you narrow down what your spiritual gifts were. And mine came up as knowledge and wisdom and discernment. And I was such a kind of naive in the whole thing. I didn't even realize that knowledge was one of the spiritual gifts. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, oh my goodness, my whole academic life, I think, had been preparing me that history was what I love. And then I've got this faith of mine and I have this ancient text sitting in front of me and I never put it together that there's history right in front of me. So why wasn't I studying the Bible from a historical perspective? Mm-hmm. And as every good historian knows, you start with language so that you can read original texts. Mm-hmm. So I'm faced with Greek or Aramaic or Hebrew and I've always been drawn to the Old Testament. So I was like, yeah, Hebrew, I'm going to learn Hebrew. And we struggled financially at that time and I couldn't afford to take a course. Mm-hmm. So I thought, internet's full of wild, wonderful things. And so I taught myself with the Spirit's help, with God's help for sure.
Sure.
But yeah, so I would walk around. I work at the University of Prince Edward Island as a library technician. Mm-hmm. And so I would walk around on my lunches just saying Aleph Bet Gimel, Aleph Bet Gimel, repeat. And then the next day, Aleph Bet Gimel Dalet. Hey, you know, I would just every day I would add more. And then once I learned the 22 letters, like to be able to say them, then I found little videos that would show the character of the letter. And so I learned to associate the character with the letter. And then I learned the Hebrew vowel indicators so that I could read a word. And then I got the Bible that has both, you know, the English and the Hebrew so I could compare. And then I thought, well, okay, I'm getting it and picking it up, but I got to learn vocabulary. Yeah. So how do I learn vocabulary? And I had a blog a couple of years before I did a genealogy blog. And I thought, well, I've used like the WordPress blog platform before. So I just kind of done. I feel like the Spirit just said, create a Hebrew blog on words to help you learn words. Mm-hmm. Right. It wasn't necessary for anyone else. It was for me to help. But I thought it would be a little nice little thing if someone else happened to find it helpful.
Sure.
And so, yeah, so I just, it took me 43 years to find that God had a plan for my life from the beginning. Like, I can see, looking back, all this like interest in history and academia, and yeah, it all just kind of tied in together. And then when I was 43 years old, I was like, oh, I have a purpose. And, you know, when you find out what your spiritual gifts are, you can't just say, yay, I found it out. You have to use them. It's like, you know, getting a birthday gift and not opening it. You got to use it. So, yeah. So I guess this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I remember going to church, to worship practice. I sing, and I was all excited. And I told my pastor that I had started a Hebrew blog, and his face just was like, it just said, oh, okay. Like, all right. Like, who's going to read that? I don't think he meant to be discouraging. I think it was just, his face couldn't help but reflect what mine was thinking.
Right. Right.
And that kind of thing would have gutted me before. But I just remember thinking, it's just gave me more oomph to go and do it. That's why I think it had to be the Spirit kind of pushing me on. Mm-hmm. That's how I started Hebrew Bible lesson, Hebrew word lesson, in 2017, October 2017. And there's been a posting every Sunday since.
Wow. So I'm very curious. When you started grasping the Hebrew language.
Yeah.
Did the Bible come alive to you in a whole new way, in a way that you hadn't seen it before?
Oh yeah. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Things were popping out like that. And I don't even know how to describe it other than, it's just like it jumps off the page in 3D when you start to really see some of these patterns that you see through words. Like when you start finding where these words show up and then looking even into the New Testament, you know, and how they carry through like ribbons. And then you just start to see these beautiful patterns emerge and things become clearer. Yeah.
One of the things I used to say in the podcast, whenever I was with the whole group, would say it's when we think about a level of professionalism in any type of profession, that when it comes to writing, that the Bible is that uber professional, incredible, otherworldly type of writing. Would you agree? Would you say that it's like next level?
Oh yeah. There's so many layers. Like it's like an onion, right? You keep finding new layers everywhere you look. And when you think you've read it and you got it, and something else pops up, like it's just, when I kind of read it, even if I wasn't a faithful believer, just looking at it as a literary text, it's so brilliant. It's so brilliant that it really is proof to me that it is divinely inspired. Like just how everything, you know, you see one thing here and it pops up in these weird, unexpected places, all, you know, and it keeps happening. And this is a text written over thousands of years with multiple authors, you know, with varying backgrounds. And yet these little things still pop up. It just, there's this continuous flow that just, it's brilliant, I think.
Yeah. Well, just out of curiosity, was there any like specific word or letter or passage or moment whenever you realized that English doesn't capture it? And so it just blew up for you?
I mean, if you think about even how we think, like the word angel, right? Malak. Mm-hmm. Angel means a messenger. Mm-hmm. And we have this weird association with angels and wings and all things, right?
Right.
There's no wings on angels in the Bible. Nope. There's supernatural beings with wings, but an angel is a messenger. So we put such emphasis on that word, but you can tell a friend who brings you good news that they are an angel. You know, so it's like looking at words in new ways and not realizing that there's more to the story. Hasatan, that's a big one.
I was going to ask you about that. Yes. Yeah, I just did a study on that. It's wild. Like, it's wild. Why they made it a name sometimes. Like,
oh, that's my biggest beef. Yes.
Right.
We've got the Lord. We've taken Yahweh's name and made it into a title. Right. And then we took Hasatan, which is a title, the adversary, and turned it into a name. And it drives me crazy. I think there's really something twisted about that.
It's so bizarre. Yeah, it's almost like there was an underlying reason why it was done. Like they had developed in their culture at some point, and once it got to that point, they were like, okay, this is an entity with that is his name now, and over here we're not going to say his name, so we're going to put capital LORD in the English version for that. You know, and it's like I don't understand it.
And I get that you want to preserve the awe-inspiring beauty of God and sure. the name that he's been given, but to change it into this very underwhelming title, mm-hmm. you know, the Lord and human have been called lords of things all the time. It just seems, sure. it seems to have done the opposite effect. It doesn't, mm-hmm. you know, capture the grandness of Yahweh. So, yeah. And, you know, even the angel of the Lord is called a Satan. So we have to be careful how we use the Satan, right? Numbers 22, I think it is Balaam.
Yes.
You know, angel of the Lord comes and stands as an adversary against him. So,
right. Yeah, and it says Hasatan. I've seen where it's used for the Philistines. I've seen where it's used for David.
Yeah.
I also saw, I believe it's 2 Samuel and 1 Chronicles. I think where it says the Lord incited David to have a census, and then later it says, and Satan incited. So like you've got to really think about what's going on here yeah. and who is the one in power and who's the one that's actually doing the thing. So
exactly.
That for me is something that just enlightened me when I started discovering that. And that was just barely scratching the surface of a single little Hebrew word. I can only imagine yeah. what your mind is seeing. That you've been doing this, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's fascinating personally. So
yeah.
you've said on your blog that you're a student and a learner and that you yeah. are, you say I'm not an expert, but since you've been doing this since 2017 and here we are 2025, so 8 years later, what would you say are the biggest mistakes that you see people make when they're doing like Hebrew word studies? Like, when it comes to popular Christian teaching and we see these speakers or whatever talk about it, what would you say the biggest mistakes are?
Oh, well, you know, I would say kind of looking for a word, but not putting it into its historical context or looking at the big picture that the word is in, mm-hmm. right? It's kind of important to look at kind of how a word goes through an entire text, right? From the Tanakh to the Brit Hadashah, the New Testament. How sure. do these words kind of fill in major themes that mm-hmm. kind of run through ribbons like wilderness and water and redemption and turning back, right? Shuv and rising up. Like the Bible, it's one story made up of a lot of words, and we're kind of in the midst of that story.
Right. Right.
It's not done yet. So it's kind of good to know these words, but we have to look at what is God trying to teach us overall. And mm-hmm. how do these words fit into the story and kind of grand scheme of things? You know, there's a lot of people who are like, well, I'm just going to learn kind of these words, but not place it in the context from which they're found. Mm-hmm. It's like that's a rather big mistake.
Since you know Hebrew, this is just a random question that I was thinking of just now. I know a lot of people, I've interviewed a lot of people over the years that have looked at Genesis chapter 1, you know, 2 and 3 in particular. Yeah. And you may know what my question's about, but there are some people like Dr. John Walton that says, okay, if you look at the original Hebrew, it's not actually creation ex nihilo, it's creation ex materia. God, the Elohim are taking things and assembling them. Not to just pigeonhole you into this same conversation, I'm just curious, do you have any thoughts? Like, some people say it's not physical creation, but that it's actually like a temple dedication. That's what Genesis 1 is. Where do you fall in that? Like, what do you think? Or do you know?
Wow. Well, you know, I think it's great to kind of contemplate all of that as both as possibilities.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes there's things in the Bible that we're just not gonna know.
Okay.
And it's great to think those through, but not put too much emphasis on those. Sure. I do see the beauty of creation kind of coming through that text. And I see like a lot of kind of parallels of things that we see mm-hmm. later in biblical texts. Like you see what's set up in those first chapters of Genesis repeating over and over again. Mm-hmm. So whether it's all, you know, reflecting what the temple is, yes, it can be that. It can also be, you know, full creation coming into being. So to say one is right and one is wrong, mm-hmm. I'm always hesitant of doing that biblically. There's certain biblical truths that are absolutes.
Yes. But
when it comes to studying it academically, let's be open-minded and consider all these various things and to help mm-hmm. our thoughts and our connection to God grow. Because if we're studying the Bible just for knowledge sake, mm-hmm. if you're a believer, we're kind of off on the wrong track. Right. That's
yeah.
great for somebody to read the Bible who is not a believer. Excellent. Read it like it's some sort of literal text. And then we can just sit back and pray that you find, you know, that the Spirit right. moves you. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of us, I think it's top notch to say, God, what do you want me to learn from all this study? Help me get closer to you. And if there's arguments that come out that aren't really pushing that, then maybe step away.
Got it. Now, here's a tough question.
Yeah.
And I didn't send you this one ahead of time.
Oh, no.
So
didn't send the last one either.
I know, I didn't. Yeah, yeah. Throwing you for a loop here. But I'm just very curious. So one of the things that I had noticed just myself, okay, and this is just, I know a Hebrew word, so here we go. So in that first Genesis chapter, it doesn't use the tetragrammaton with Elohim. It just says Elohim. Does that matter? Does that matter?
I don't know. I think what's in the Bible is what is supposed to be there.
Sure. Right. So it's supposed to be there. And I was curious why the Yod Heh Vav Heh was left out in that first chapter. Is it because it was written earlier, or is it because the author, you know what I mean? Like, do you have a theory on that? I was just curious because when you get to Genesis chapter 2, it's Yahweh Elohim is forming the man and doing all. But in the beginning, it doesn't say that. And I'm like, does that mean there's more than one, that it's the sons of God? Like, I don't know. I'm just, again, probably using a word out of its context. And so I want to be careful.
I haven't personally looked too deeply into that. I know there's a lot of people who do focus on like kind of textual criticism and then looking at comparative, like maybe this could be written. Clearly we got kind of two narratives that compete a little, but work together in a way.
Sure.
And so I would, if I had to guess, would say they're probably written maybe slightly different times, maybe not necessarily by the same hand. Mm-hmm. But there's better people with more skill in that to ask.
I've done so much research just on that, you know, and looking at the documentary hypothesis and like all of this stuff. But it leads me to that question that I asked you, that a lot of people come to Hebrew because they're searching for deeper meaning, which is what I was doing. And so how do you balance uncovering real richness in the language without drifting into speculative or mystical interpretation, which is exactly what I just said. If you hear me, like, is there more than one God, right? So that, how do you do that? Like, how do you balance that?
Yeah. I say, number one, always start your study with prayer for discernment and asking for the Spirit's guidance, because we as humans want to be able to take something and run with it.
Oh yes. I do it all the time.
And we have to be careful because we can go off in a wrong direction. And again, it comes back to like, why are we studying this? Is it for more knowledge? Or is it to get closer to God? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important to pray for discernment, ask the Spirit to open up revelation, and be humble and not get too pumped up with our own knowledge.
Yeah.
Which is easy
to do. Definitely get, And one of the things that I try to tell everybody is like, look, I'm like you. I try to be humble about it. Like, I'm not an expert. I put a lot of effort in this. I've studied the Bible since I was 10 years old, you know? So, but when I started getting into these languages, like when we mentioned Hasatan earlier and I saw it for the first time, and my mind just melted and I was like, I don't even know what to do anymore, you know? And so,
yeah.
And a lot of it, one of the things that I learned back in, I guess it was 2021, was the hermeneutic of audience relevance. Like to when you read the Bible, read it, you know, from the perspective of the people, like who, what, where, why, when, how. And I started thinking about you in Hebrew. And so that was one of the questions I sent you. How important is the ancient Hebrew worldview when you're studying these words? And I didn't give you much time when I sent you these questions, so maybe you have something or don't, but can you give an example where modern assumptions distort how a word would have been understood by an ancient Israelite? Do you have any ideas?
Well, first of all, I would say, yeah, okay. Hebrew worldview, absolutely essential.
Okay.
Absolutely essential. If you're going to understand that kind of the historical context, if you do understand that, it's kind of really going to make things pop for you. And, you know, it's like all the weird stuff in the Bible that we tend to shy away from, it starts to make a lot more sense when you know the historical context.
Yeah.
And, you know, so when people mock the Bible, it kind of really gets me because, you know, it shows their ignorance and their lack of respect for history when they bring some of these like Old Testament weird stuff up. You know, I don't know. It irks me because it really, it's like, you're not getting the context. You know, Sarah and Abraham wouldn't get what we're talking about half the time. So why should we judge them for what they're, you know, what comes up around their story? Sure. I guess, I mean, I'd mentioned like the Hasatan and angels, and I mean, there's so many kind of words that kind of illuminate the scripture and highlight that some of the stuff we think of is not as weird as we think when we read the text, you know, even things like sacrifices, getting to understand all the various sacrifices. And then it wasn't killing for no reason at all. I mean, half the time, most of the time they ate what they sacrificed, right? They had a feast out of it.
Right.
So just understanding those historical contexts makes all the difference, especially, well, not especially with the Old Testament, it's with Old Testament and New Testament.
Sure.
Yeah.
One of the words that gets thrown around a lot in my circles is the word covenant, and it, how God uses that word, or if he doesn't use that word. Did you ever do a word study on that word, covenant in particular?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, then I'll go to HebrewWordLessons.com and look it up myself. Yeah. And all of you guys listening, that's where you should go too.
You should go. Yeah. Yeah. Because,
you know, there's a big question that's going around in my circles is, for example, was Adam in covenant with God? And so I'm sorry to keep going back to Genesis. It's just it's a topic of conversation. So was Adam in covenant with God? And so when you look at the text, it's like, well, it doesn't say that he's in a covenant with God. Matter of fact, you don't see the word really show up until Noah. And then when Noah comes on the scene, then after the flood, then God makes this covenant with Noah. And then it seems from there, like God will establish a covenant with someone like Abraham, right? He makes this covenant with him. Or later, whenever you get to Moses, and then you have the Sinai covenant where the Israel enters into this agreement with God, but it doesn't really say that about Adam. So one of the things I was curious about, like with just the construction of words and text, like, can you look at a word, for example, whenever Adam is in the garden, he's supposed to tend and care for the garden. That happens to be the same word that a Levitical priest has for what he's tending to. So can you take those words and say, oh, that must be what Adam is doing? Or are we taking what Adam is doing and then understanding better what's happening by the time we get to the Levitical priesthood? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, this is an example where a word study alone isn't necessarily going to help you all the time.
Right.
Because you're looking for a specific word to describe covenant or a covenant. And doesn't mean that that concept isn't being used earlier mm-hmm. with Adam and okay. Eve, right, in the garden. And the promise of a serpent, you know, will bite the heel and, you know, yes. will be crushed. And you know, in that way, it is almost an Edenic, you know.
Covenant.
Yeah. So, yeah, you got to be careful that we're always can't always be looking specifically for a specific word to give us the specific answer we're looking for.
That's good. So you can get, yeah, that's really good. So we can see things that look like the covenant or a covenant and assume, not really assume, but just say it's quite possible. We can be open-minded and say it's quite possible that that is like the origin of how God begins covenant with man, because there was nothing else. Now, that was one of the things somebody told me, that there's a group that believes that mankind was already in existence and that Adam was the first enlightened covenant man. Have you ever heard this before?
I have kind of, yeah.
Yeah. And so again, I don't know how much, you know, Hebrew words I have to study, but I don't think it's going to give me the answer I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's right.
But you would agree.
Yeah, I would agree.
Right.
Yeah. And on top of like, one of the things that I talked about this Sunday was, you know, what is God's first words in the Bible, right? Let there be light. And today is the third night of Hanukkah.
Yes.
And then tying to Jesus, who was in Jerusalem during Hanukkah, John mm-hmm. 10, like the Feast of Dedication, and just tying that with Jesus being the light. And over and over in John, I am the light, I am the light, I am the light.
Yes.
And then, you know, then the Jews ask him, are you really the Messiah? And he's like, I told you already. Yes. But they want to stone him. They want to put his light out. So, and then he is living the first words, you know, let there be light. So it's just these beautiful ribbons going through from Genesis. I mean, mm-hmm. all these things happen from Genesis. If someone recently asked me, what's the best book in the Bible to really understand the New Testament or the old, like what's the text from the Old Testament? And I said, well, Genesis, they're all good. They're all good. Can't put one right. together, but Genesis shows all these patterns. It starts all the pattern making that you just see over and over and over again. Hmm. So yeah. Sorry, I went a tangent there, but.
No, it's not a tangent at all. That is something that I hear a lot. I do. I hear that a lot, that you cannot understand your New Testament, especially they'll say, if you don't understand your Old Testament, yes, I would agree, right? But then Genesis, what an important origin book that is. It sets the stage for everything.
It does.
It's quite remarkable. So that brings me to my next question. So you've already told us that you're a follower of Yeshua. And or Jesus, but Yeshua. But you've also been pursuing academic study. So one of the things that I've noticed when you get into these, you know, into academia, there's some tension. There's some tension between what somebody might find in the academic world versus what you might find in your faith commitments, right? Versus like critical scholarship. So, and I see it all the time. Online, you know, at Facebook, they demand certainty or they want to have an argument. So how do you personally navigate that? Like, how do you handle it? I think I already know the answer just by how you've handled this conversation so far.
Well, honestly, not always well.
Oh, okay. So you're mean online? Are you a keyboard?
No, opposite. No, I do all right, I guess. I mean, yeah. I'm a seeker, and right, I want to understand people's perspectives. And I think it's good to hear what's going on out there. There's a lot of, I think, people off the mark. But you have to listen to be able to discuss things well with them. And I am always open to discussion if they're open to it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know everything, and I'm always open to learning. Mm-hmm. But I do, like we said earlier, pray for discernment. And so when I'm challenged, I will take the time kind of to pray and take the time to study. And, but when it comes to like really nasty people online, and I've faced it, you know, when you have public ministry, you're going to face it. If they're nasty, I just won't engage.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. That's I just won't engage. There are some rare exceptions. And when I do, if I do feel really moved to respond, I kind of try to give a really slow, measured, kind response, right? It's never good to be reactionary. It never helps. But I would say, you know, when it comes to academia, it's usually if there is, you know, a professor or someone who's like really kind of goes against what I feel is right or what the Bible is saying, they're going to be also very measured and very succinct about their beliefs. And I can say, well, I can listen to what you have to say, but I'm always going to go to the Bible as my top source. And I'm always going to pray for discernment, and what I feel is right, I've got to go with.
Right.
But like I said, I'm always open to change. There might be, I can be wrong about things and I can grow always.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the best way. I mean, how else could you do it? Right. I mean, really, I mean, if you want to come at it with this, like, oh, I have all knowledge and I know everything. And so therefore I can't be taught anything. And I do know some of those people online, by the way. Yeah. They very much come from that very, you know, high regard of themselves. But one of the things that I found is that to be humble about it, you know, to say that, you know, God inspired these words through men and they sat down and they wrote these things, and we're not in their culture. We're not using the word, you know, words change. We see this ourselves, even in our own language, words take on new meaning as time goes by, they evolve, you know, and we see that it happens in the scripture that these words, they don't just lock in and like, this is what that word means. I mean, it can progress and become more. And so, yeah, I like that. I like that, you know, we use the Bible as our authority, but at the same time, we have to be humble enough to say, maybe I don't know. Maybe I just don't know. But just because I don't know doesn't mean that I don't have this joy in my faith with the Lord. Like I am, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's how the change is. And my beliefs have changed over the years. I've had people that were very kind to me, or they were very thorough in their work and I could see it in their work. One of those things that pops up all the time in my talks are the chiastic structures that are found in the Bible.
Aren't those fabulous?
And I only know a little bit about them. I only know a little bit. And somebody's like, all of Genesis. Or then you zoom out from the Bible and you can see like this gigantic chiasm and stuff. I'm like, what? Or they'll say like, this double X chiasm that's in Revelation. Like, I can't see any of this. I don't know what you're talking about. So it's like, obviously it's the word of God. Like you said, it's so deep. And I want to keep learning, and I don't want to be frustrated because I don't know something. I want to keep learning. Right. That's what I love about your blog. It's so cool because you are public and you're saying, this is the word that I've learned. And you start, you know, you give us a lot of information about it. And so guys, go to HebrewWordLessons.com. Go to this blog and check it out. Sarah is very humble and very funny and very cool. And it just, and she's a friend of Bobby Cruikshank's. And so, you know, she's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So just in your own personal study, I think I've already kind of asked this question, but is there a word, a particular word that you studied that just really changed the way that you read scripture or view scripture? Okay, we talked about Angelos and Hasatan, but was there anything that just really got a hold of you?
That's a really hard one to choose because there's so many great Hebrew words.
Do you have a top? Give me a top five. Top five.
I'll do two.
Okay, sounds great.
So Etzer is one.
Etzer?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So God created women to be an etzer for Adam.
Okay.
Right? And that changed as a woman, that changed for me, because what it means is not what history has translated it generally as, right?
Okay. This is good. Let's hear. Yeah. What is it?
Yeah. So helper, right? We often get the term helper.
I've heard help meet.
Help meet. Yes. That's another one. Mm-hmm. But that word in particular is used very rare. I think maybe it's twice to describe an army that comes, you know, as a helper to defeat, you know. Once in Genesis, it's used to describe this woman, the reason for making woman. The rest of the time, it describes God.
Really?
So God is not a helper or a sidekick or a helpmeet.
That's right? True.
The word is to mean an ally, to come in alliance with Adam. It also means to come to the rescue when someone cries for help. So it really, we have to rethink what that whole word means. Mm. I grew up with a woman as a pastor, Pastor Ruth Snyder. She's gone to be with the Lord now. But I had no idea growing up that there anybody ever thought that that couldn't happen, that a woman couldn't be pastor or had limitations in the church. Right. It was in my 20s before I realized that, if you can believe that.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I grew up in the world where if a woman preached, it was way off, way wrong. Like, that's the world I grew up in. So when I first met like a woman pastor, I was a little shocked, you know, but you're saying, nope, not you. You're all right. It's all good.
I had no idea. It was a different world, for sure. So it wasn't until my 20s that I realized that. And then I started to question, you know, my own path. And anyways, so when I discovered this Etzer, I was like, oh, yeah, this makes absolute beautiful sense to me that with God's Spirit, once we are committed to being followers of Yeshua, and then when he left, you know, he commissioned the Spirit to come into us, we've got, you know, Pentecost, we can do anything with the Spirit within us. And women as allies and as, you know, rescuers and to help is more than just helping. It's a word to describe God almost all the time, that word is used. So yeah, so that one really changed me.
Wow.
The word for love.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Number two. What do you
got? Yeah. Number two, love. There's two kind of main words for love, chesed and ahava.
Okay.
So ahava is kind of the I love pizza kind of love, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
You know, we
really, really love it. But
I have deep affection for pizza. You know,
that's awesome.
I was in Italy this summer and man, I had deep affection for that pizza. but the other word is chesed. And when it comes to character, words that describe God's character, it's almost always chesed. And chesed is often translated as loving kindness. Some people have questioned that, but I really like that translation still because it's love in action, right? Whereas ahava, I love pizza, is not love in action. It's just a warm feeling.
Yeah.
Chesed is love in action. So I just think it really challenges us on how we should be loving people, right? Yeshua said this is the biggest commandment, the top commandment, right? Love one another. And it's not, I love pizza kind of love. It's
right.
Being action. It's showing love. So even in our own families, half the time, do we, like when we might call them up and say hi, you know, but what are we doing to show their love? How are we bearing God's image, you know, to everyone around us? And not just the people that are in our families, but the people who are, you know, looked down on right now by the church. Or by society in general.
Right, right.
How are we, you know, showing chesed to them? So I think that's a top one for me. I've always loved.
I'm very curious. How do you chesed your enemies?
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus really amped it up, didn't he?
Absolutely.
He elevated it. Yeah.
I don't understand how half the world cannot see the brilliance of Yeshua. And this
I'm
is
serious.
Radical. Like, why did you see this?
Exactly. It's always funny to me, like whenever the people that want to keep women down, and I'm like, you do know that he went to Mary Magdalene immediately after his resurrection. You do know that. And what he commissioned her to do, you do know that he was supported. He was helped. His ministry was aided and financially stabilized by these women.
He was the first person to minister to the Samaritans, woman at the well.
Right.
You know, she went and she immediately, after, you know, coming into contact with Yeshua and having that wonderful conversation, she immediately went and told everyone in Samaria.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out by the time that Philip gets there and they have this big revival in Samaria, that it all started because of what this woman did.
Yeah. Yeah. They were already attuned. Their hearts were open.
They were already there. Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah.
And even Paul, we give Paul a hard time, you know, and I struggle with Paul in my 20s and 30s, right? Just for some of the things that come up, because I didn't understand the historical context of what's happening. But if you look at Paul and what he does for women, he's radically changing the narrative. Like radically, he's putting women up on a pedestal in places they never had the chance to do before.
Right.
Priscilla, you know, all the women listed in Romans 16. Yes. Just, it's amazing. So we
Phoebe.
Have to take those
I love what he talks about Phoebe. Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, he even uses the word, I think it's diakonos for her. And it's like, that's deacon. That's a deacon word.
It's deacon. Yeah.
which I got to be careful now. That would bring me to my next question. Okay. So many theology debates lean hard on Hebrew and Greek claims. And so I ask you, what would you say to someone who believes correct theology can be proven primarily through word studies alone? What would you say to that?
I would say no.
Absolutely not. You cannot do it.
No, it takes many words to tell a story, right?
Yes, it does.
And words can be used to manipulate. Mm-hmm. So if you look, you have to look at the whole story, right?
Yes.
You have to look at the whole story and where the words are placed. You have to understand biblical metaphors and idioms. Mm-hmm.
Idioms.
Example.
That's something else in the Hebrew, like Jewish idioms. Do you know any off the top of your head?
Yep. I do.
Let's hear one.
So I recently took sugar out of my diet.
Okay. I just did that myself a year and a half ago. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great thing. Has it changed your physically?
I'm down 110 pounds, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah.
I lost not quite as well. I lost 53.
Kudos to you. That's
January.
Wonderful.
I can say I quit cold turkey. Right? Uh-huh. That's an idiot.
We say that all the time. Yep.
And if we said that to Moses. Mm-hmm. You'd be like, what?
Right.
Right. In the same way, we've got biblical idioms that we don't see the surface read. So one of those, one of my favorites, is covering the feet. Do you know this one?
Okay. I got to hear this. Okay. I also heard of uncovering the feet, which is.
Okay. Yeah. That's a slightly, there's a different. Okay. That's in Ruth. Okay.
All right.
So covering the feet. Mm-hmm. It's an idiom for going to the bathroom.
Oh.
So Judges 3:24, we've got the Moabite king Eglon, and he goes in, he gets killed in his chamber. They'll go read the story. It's a fascinating story,
yeah, he's a big dude. He's a big dude. He was eating too much sugar.
Yeah, exactly. But his servants, like, he's taking a long time. So the servants say, well, they think that he's probably just covering his feet. Now, if you read that, what does that mean? So it's lehasak et regla is the Hebrew.
Okay.
And it literally means, if you imagine most of them had like long garments, right? So when you squat down to relieve yourself, your feet get covered.
Ah, there you
go. That's where it comes from. We see it also in 1 Samuel 24. Uh-huh. It's when David is hiding in the cave. Saul goes in to the chamber, and David has the chance to kill him, but he doesn't. But if you read the text just in Hebrew, it says Saul went into the cave to cover his feet.
So he was going to use the restroom.
Yeah. Now, most of your translations will say that Saul goes in to relieve himself. But if you read through, so anyone who's doing a word study, if they're studying feet and then they come across this, it's going to be like, well, why is it say feet here when it's he's going to the bathroom, what translation says. Well, it's because that's the idiom.
Wow.
So you have to, you know, you can't just study the words. You got to look at the metaphors and idioms and the full story.
And you have a lot of that on your blog.
Yeah.
You do, right? You got a lot of that. So guys, go to HebrewWordLessons.com and you'll see those. I'm curious, how about 3 days and three nights? Is that an idiom, or is that or is it literal 3 days and three? What is that about?
You know, I'm not sure if I have a perfect answer for you, but I did do a whole Hebrew word lesson on the phrase on the third day.
Okay.
And that pops up all over the place. Yeah. So yeah, I'm not sure.
We'll go look that up
on the third day. There, if you do go to the site, there is a little box on the left side where you can just type in a word and it'll pop up. But I also have word lists. There's three word lists, A to H and whatever. So if you're looking for a specific word, if it's been done, then you can check that. And I have people write me all the time saying, can you do this word? So I have a huge list of what I'm going to do. So I add this to the list with our email, and I usually try to email them when I do get the word up, but sometimes it's not till like 6 months later, but
yeah. So, I mean, if you've been doing this for 8 years and you've put one out every Sunday, so what you got 300 and 400 words?
Well, full disclosure, I almost every week it's a new word. Yeah. Sometimes it's a reflection. Sometimes it's a quick, and because this year, cause I work full time, I'm working on my doctorate.
Yes.
And our pastor retired in August. So now I'm filling in. So
you're busy. You're busy. So on Sunday, instead of filling in, you're right.
So it's not a new word every week. I always try to do a posting. I always connect. But yeah, there's a lot of words. Yeah. Since 2017, October 27. Yeah. So I should look that up. How many words has actually been, but yeah, there's a good chunk of words for you to dive into. And you know, the other thing is when I started, you know, in 2017, I was still learning. So some of those early blogs, postings, I have tried to sometimes go back and kind of, cause I'm constantly learning and there's more to discover and there's more that I do discover and learn. And I want to share it all. So it's one of those things. Some of them I think are my earlier ones could probably use an up.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's, and that's good. I mean, we can all do that with our work. I know some of the earlier stuff that I did on the podcast, I cringe when I listen to it. I'm like, what was I thinking? So look, so you know, your work has been used by pastors and teachers. It's been quoted in books. So do you feel a weight of responsibility knowing how easily Hebrew explanations can shake doctrine in sermons? Do you feel a weight to that?
I do.
And does that affect how you
sometimes
write?
Sometimes it's terrifying to me, honestly.
Does it?
Well, you know, what if I get it wrong? You know, what if I misinterpret? Course. You know, but I don't know. I feel like if this is a spiritual gift that I've been given, and I feel like it has been, that, you know, as long as I do things with prayer and humility, always to asking the Spirit's guidance, I can confidently say I'm doing the best I can.
That's right.
And I'm always humbly, you know, open to correction and conversation. And I have actually changed a few things where I've posted and someone has pointed it out. And I'm like, you're right. I didn't see that, or, you know, and I've fixed things up where I can. So I think just being open and honest and, you know, like you were saying early, some people like are absolutes. And I think when people get so, this is it, this is, then they're trying to be kind of little gods of their own making, right? They're not open to the Spirit moving things. So I don't want to do that. So yeah, sometimes I'm like, oh, this is this ministry. I feel like it's a ministry I've been given.
It's absolutely a ministry. It is.
Yeah. Has some weighty consequences if I get too pompous about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the other thing I always do is I never try to theologize in my blog. I am just trying to put the words out, let you read through where they show up, and then, you know, you can use the Spirit and what you learn from there to help you in your own journey.
Right.
I created the blog to learn vocabulary for myself. Yes. Right. The blessing is all mine. I'm just happy that anyone else feels blessed by it as well.
Yeah. I think it's a tremendous amount of work. It's obvious when you read your blog how passionate you are about it, and it's fun, and it's I've enjoyed this just talking to you, and the way that you're talking, the way you are, it comes across in your blog.
Oh, thanks.
Your
I always do try to write like I speak. Yeah. I'm not so concerned about grammar.
Yeah.
You know, just write like you speak.
Yeah. So that's living up to what I've read. Like I feel it, you know, when I'm talking to you. So that's so awesome.
So when you had originally asked me, and I thought this was just a verbal, I was like, okay, I can, or, you know, an audio.
Yeah, audio.
I can do that. Because part of being a blog, the reason I blog instead of vlog is because I don't necessarily want to be seen.
Sure, I understand that.
But, you know, it's good. You got to expand and grow.
I was an audio only podcast for years. And whenever I had several people that were asking, like, hey, if we want to give to your ministry, how do we do it? And I don't know. I'm not a nonprofit. And so I'm like, well, I don't know. And so I got on Patreon and I discovered with Patreon that a lot of people do these video logs, vlogs. And I thought, you know, maybe that could be something that would be special for the listeners that want to have more. I can give them exclusive content and stuff. So now I'm doing it a lot more than I did before. But I don't like to be on camera either. I don't like it. You know, I'm not a fan.
Yeah. But you know, it's true. You will get more people. Like half the time when I'm looking for something, I far prefer to see people speak and hear than just listen, just the way my learning works. So yeah, I think it does help ministry when you start to put yourself out there for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's my final question. And it's kind of based on the last question that I sent you earlier, but I'm going to shift it just a little bit. Okay. So for listeners who feel intimidated by Hebrew or afraid of getting it wrong, obviously the healthiest posture, you've already told us to be humble, to pray to the Lord, you know, to come at it from that way, but so that they can learn without turning into a weapon. But let's go back a little bit. Is it possible for someone like me or any of my listeners to learn the Hebrew language?
Yep. Yeah.
I mean,
I think it's important to ask Yahweh if that's something he wants you to do.
Sure.
And if you feel the answer is yes, then do it. Mm-hmm. Not everyone is called to learn Hebrew, and that is okay. You know,
I know one of them.
Yeah.
I'm not called to learn Hebrew. I love to read and learn, but I don't have the time or the patience to do it.
We're all given different gifts. And that's, you know, not everyone is called to learn Hebrew. But if you do feel the call, if anyone feels the call, do it. Mm. And you don't have to spend hundreds of dollars to do it. I did it for free.
Yeah.
As a Canadian, I had to learn French in school. Uh-huh. And then when I did my studies, medieval studies, I had to learn Latin. Mm-hmm. And I struggled, so I barely got by in Latin or French. And I just convinced myself, I said, I am not a languages person. My brain does not work for languages. Right. Just that's it, you know? And so it really amazes me that when I look back to after I did that spiritual gifts course, and then I was like, I got to learn Hebrew. And I never questioned it. Mm-hmm. Like, whereas my whole life is like, I suck at languages. I'm horrible. And then here I am like, oh, I'm just going to learn Hebrew.
Yes.
So, you know, there's resources out there. It can be done, but it does mean spending a lot of time. Like I devoted, you know, a couple hours a day, every day trying to learn it, but it only took me about a year and a half to get the basics down. And then, and then I was like, now I got to learn vocabulary. And then even word lessons started. So it's a it's such a blessing if you do. If this is a path that one of your listeners decides to go on, oh, it's a blessing. I think you'll only see wonderful things come out of it.
That's awesome. And if you're other people that are like me, you actually have the wonderful opportunity to utilize Sarah's website as a resource. All of her work that she's done since 2017 is out there for you. You can look at these different words and you can see somebody that is really looking at this with humility and with love and wanting to know Yeshua better, Yahweh better. Like it's so obvious in this blog. I think you're going to enjoy it. You're going to love it. And then take advantage of it. HebrewWordLessons.com. Go check it out. And Sarah Fisher, thank you so much for being with me on this podcast.
Rick, thank you for asking me. Appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed it. I hope that you did. You know, because if the time went by really fast. I don't know if you noticed that. I could talk to you for hours. I absolutely could. Well, but thank you for being on the Burrows of Berea. It means a lot to me.
Yep. Thanks so much.
All right. I'll say it again, guys. Go to HebrewWordLessons.com and you can read her blog where she does a word a week or idioms or any of those other fun things about the Hebrew language where you can learn about Hasatan and how I've got it wrong most of my life. And also you can learn about Malak, like we talked about at the very top of the podcast, about angels and how they're just messengers. Guys, go look at her website. It is fantastic. And thank you, Bobby Cruikshank, for making this introduction. Sarah is just as cool as you said that she was. All right, you guys take care, and we'll talk to you guys again next time on the Birds of Berea. Peace out.